You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what Sports Talk Radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this April 8th, 2026. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is the Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another beautiful day here in the Auburn and Opelika area. Tons to get to on today's show. Basketball transfer portal going crazy. Baseball conversations on a loser Wednesday. That hurts to say. And a lot of other stuff going on in the world of sports as well. We're going to cover it for the next 2 hours here on ESPN 106.7. Christian, happy Wednesday to you, or Wednesday.
I'm here. We're here.
We're here.
Yeah. Everything else, I mean, beautiful day, a little windy, but beautiful day outside. If, you know, that's how we feel, that's how we want to compliment and start our happy hump day to you, sir.
Happy hump day. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We are diving into Auburn basketball, transfer portal in general.
More news.
We do also have thoughts on Auburn baseball, believe it or not. And some are repeating thoughts and remarks that we have made about past series. Some are new because I don't think you take this midweek with a grain of salt the way that you've taken some of them, because you didn't look prepared at all. You didn't look ready at all. And we have plenty of examples to dive into all of that. We also have a major, again, just high school sports updates, because I'm surprised you still have a voice. You're 40% through your five-game, five-day stretch.
It's gotten better as the day goes on, but it'll go out sometime tonight.
Oh, of course, especially, here, the two-out, two-run double to put Auburn up 5-4. Yeah.
I can't wait.
There will be nothing left. You're going back to the same location, 30 seconds down the road?
Yeah, give or take, yeah.
Because it's not the same parking lot, is it? It's a little bit different.
No, remember that, Central's baseball field is literally in the same parking lot as the football field, which are both off campus of Central High School.
Yeah.
The softball complex is on the campus of Central, which that place is just ridiculous, man. It's the nicest softball complex in the state that I've seen.
It is.
The only one that I've seen that's comparable is the brand new one that Hewitt Trustful just built. Mm-hmm. And the only reason I've seen that one and know that one, my sister plays on it.
Yeah.
And it's legit, too. Don't get me wrong.
Well, yeah. We'll apologize to voice of Auburn High softball, Jack Hudden. As the voice of Auburn High softball now, Mr. Jacob Goins here.
He picked a bad week to go out
with us as, what was it, a 16-game losing streak is snapped to the Red Devils?
The Auburn High softball squad, they had not beaten Central since 2021 and had lost their last 16 games against the Red Devils. And since the Auburn High Sports Network has been broadcasting Auburn High softball, they have not beaten Central.
Man.
So for the first time ever on the airwaves, Auburn High softball beat Central, and they did it in Phoenix City last night with me on the call, and it was awesome. It
did everything they could to not win that game and continue the streak. Some base running errors, a couple fielding errors.
Yeah,
in there
up 2-1
well.
For most of the game. Allowed Central to score and tie it up in the bottom of the sixth inning.
Yeah, single and an error and then a sack fly, right?
Yeah, and then so going to the top of the seventh, Auburn again on the road in Central, and it was, I'm trying to remember my book. It was Hold on. I have it all written down. Anyway, Auburn gets him on, gets him over, gets him in. That's what they did last night in that situation at Central. The nine-hole hitter, okay, comes up, reached on an infield hit. Then you go to the top of the order. Small ball, bunted her to second, then sack bunt to move her over to third because the first bunter actually got on, and then you sack bunt her over, hard hit ball up the middle, just into the pitcher's glove, who decided to throw to first rather than throw home. Auburn scores 3-2. Lily Brewer, the Ohio State commit in the circle, goes the distance, 9 strikeouts, strikes out the final batter, and Auburn breaks the streak against Central in softball. So really cool moment last night. It was a ton of fun. And, yeah, I get to head right back to Phoenix City today for Auburn High Baseball now, starting area play with a 3-game set against the Red Devils.
Small ball, you say? We'll have some thoughts on that. Some
I know
small
another
ball,
team that plays small ball.
From Plainsman Park and looked like a team that had never defended small ball before. We will dive into all of that here today. And my goodness, we have a fight to break down as well.
Yeah, we do.
From Anaheim last night. Should be a very, very fun Wednesday edition of On the Line.
Yeah. Also have Daryl Dapperts today coming up an hour or two. I'm here for the first hour of the show because of my trip to Phoenix City. Auburn High
really
Baseball. Yeah, Auburn High Baseball trip. You got it. Auburn High Baseball, 5 o'clock first pitch against Central. So I'll be hitting the road after hour number one. But phone lines are open if you have thoughts on anything going on. We'd love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. You can give us a call, Auburn basketball, Auburn baseball, high school sports, college football, and anything you want to talk about, 334-321-1390, or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. Yesterday, Auburn basketball had one known entrant to the transfer portal. That has been doubled today. Auburn has its now second player leaving the team. And this one is no surprise. Filip Jovic was a little bit of a surprise. That was one where a lot of Auburn fans were hopeful that Filip would return, especially with the way that he played down the stretch of the regular season. And then, of course, throughout the NIT, turns out money seemed to be an issue with that one, where you are asking for several million dollars and Auburn said no thank you. The entry we saw today was not all that much of a surprise. Caden Magwood has entered the transfer portal. The freshman guard, who averaged not a whole lot of points or rebounds or any stats because he didn't play very much, had to sit in the doghouse for about 2 months, and then Steven brought him out because he didn't have a choice because Auburn didn't have enough bodies, really, to play. Caden Magwood's in the transfer portal.
Yeah, averaged 3.5 points a game in the regular season, had a season-high 14 over South Alabama on Auburn's first game in the NIT at home, and that was kind of the game that everybody was like, all right, well, Steven, where has this guy been all season long? And we've heard the reports pretty much all throughout the season of Caden being one of the toughest guys to guard in practice and being one of those guys mentally that kind of took over. And
I love a good practice.
Right. Yeah. And weirdly, one player got rewarded for good practice and one person didn't. I don't know. We don't really know. But that was...
I can't.
That was kind of the conversation. And so didn't play for, as we mentioned, a whole lot. I believe played in two SEC games, right? Georgia and then Texas A&M. Played a little bit and then didn't see the floor again until the postseason. And then Steven said that he wanted to reward Caden for good grades and decided to play him in the NIT.
I was talking to a media buddy of ours earlier today, and it's fascinating to think back on this whole Caden Magwood situation because the idea and the thought and really the hope was Tahad 2.0, right? That's kind of what we thought, was a freshman point guard coming in, sit behind a experienced guard. Tahad, of course, was playing behind Denver Jones. That's a much different situation than Caden playing behind Tahad. But you thought, all right, talented freshman, playing at the guard position, can dribble, can shoot, can get up and down the floor. His athletic is everything. Maybe he can turn into what Tahad did as his freshman season, come off the bench, be impactful, make some big-time shots. And that just never happened. And when you start having off-the-floor issues that obviously puts a wrinkle in all of that and really takes the game plan and rips it up for Caden Magwood. And this was the first real big decision by Stephen Pearl as a head coach that he made and knew he was going to get questions about it, knew he was going to get flack for it, and knew that it would come up time and time again. This was the first big move that he made and stuck with it until he basically didn't have a choice.
Yeah, it was... There had to have been something else going on that we obviously didn't see on the social media side of things, but it felt personal. Whether that was Stephen to Caden, Caden to Stephen. And not that you need to look into this too much, but in Caden's message to Auburn when deciding to enter the transfer portal, when you look at a lot of the players, it's I'd like to thank this coach, that coach, and the entire coaching staff. Caden's was very short on just thank you to the coaches. And it didn't feel necessarily overly heartfelt, which, I mean, again, after a year and in today's day and age, I don't think you look at a portal message or somebody leaving the same way that you would have 5 years ago. But, yeah, just a very, very interesting dynamic with Caden, a very interesting situation that will be very interesting to see how it unfolds with where he decides to go and what he's able to do in the future to see if Auburn missed out on a big-time recruit that they were able to keep for a year but then weren't able to keep on the plains in year two, because that not only changes your hope for a point guard of the future, but now you now need an extra body in that point guard room.
Yeah, and I don't know. I think this will end up being a situation that we pretty much forget about.
Sure.
I mean, you mentioned a name earlier that entered the transfer portal, Chance Westry,
yeah,
one of those names, and it's just like, oh, yeah, I haven't thought about that name in a while. I think Cade Magwood will most likely be that. And that comes off as, yeah, he's not going to do anything when he leaves here. He very well could. I don't know. And, yeah, if he goes and balls out somewhere, it'll be a little bit more difficult to swallow. But
he won't be purely speculation if Tahad goes and plays for Pitino or he goes and plays for Dan Hurley, where Auburn fans look at him as an Auburn player. Auburn won't necessarily tie any of Caden's success to, dang it, man, he could have been one of the Auburn greats. He was one of those guys,
yeah,
for Auburn.
You're not going to check his stats once a week and be like, dadgummit.
Right.
Like, man, I can't believe we let him go. I just don't think it's going to be that. So, again, Caden Magwood has entered the transfer portal for Auburn basketball. Him, along with Filip Jovic, are now in the portal. Yes, there is a possibility they return to Auburn, but I would not hang your hat on that with these two guys in particular. It's not out of the question for guys now who enter the portal and decide to return. It's always a shaky situation. We talk about it in football more times than anything of, well, if you enter the portal, doesn't mean your roster spot is here, doesn't mean the grass isn't always greener, and there are some coaches, no matter what the sport, taking the hard-nosed Dabo Swinney approach of, don't you dare enter the portal. If you enter, you're gone.
Yeah.
If you want to go, go. But if you want to be here, you need to make that decision. He talks about that in recruiting with making other visits and stuff. But
right.
Same idea, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's no, coach, what do you mean?
I
wasn't planning on leaving, coach. Wardam. You know what I mean?
Like, Washington football definitely doesn't have that ideology, because Damon Williams clearly wanted to leave, and now he is back. But anyway, there is always that possibility.
There is, and I would throw Philip more into that conversation
100%
than Caden, and not saying that Philip has any positive momentum to return, but you feel, and everybody's portal situation is a little bit different, but just a personal feel for me, Phillips is a little bit more leverage-based. Caden's is personal and wanting to go and play, develop under a different staff.
Yeah, I just don't think there were very many Auburn fans who were like, I think there's a good chance Caden Magwood comes back.
Right.
Like, that just wasn't the conversation.
We had the hopes of, maybe not even the hopes, but the thoughts of, okay, it's going to take a couple really mature conversations between the staff, Steven and Caden, to even try and work this out, and you don't even know if those truly ever happened.
Yeah, so Auburn loses a key piece to the team. Auburn also loses a depth piece to the team, and we're still waiting on big-time decisions from Tahad Pettifer, Elijah Freeman. We got the news yesterday of Kevin Overton coming back, and man, I tell you what, after sleeping on that, I was already happy about it and excited for it, but after a bad night's sleep, I was able to think about it, and I'm very excited for Kevin Overton coming back. I think that is a monster deal that Auburn was able to pull that off, and that he clearly wanted to come back, and I think for several reasons. I think for his own personal game reason. I think for the team reason. I think because of the NIT and things like that. And look, I think his role, whatever it is next year, he will be a crucial part to what Auburn does in year two under Stephen Pearl. And I guarantee Stephen Pearl is thanking his lucky stars, because you at least have one guy coming back who you coached a year ago and has been around college basketball. And I believe Andy Burcham dropped this nugget on the drive yesterday, where Kevin Overton will be returning to the same school in back-to-back seasons for the first time in his career.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big deal for him. And so I am very excited about KO coming back.
You feel like at worst there is that comfort piece, right?
If nothing else.
At bare minimum, you have that comfort of, okay, we can draw up a play for a 35% three-point shooter, and it be enough to get the offense going. It can be enough to extend a lead, or at worst, it can be enough to draw a couple defenders, and then whoever else happens to be on the floor, there's a comfort in having a returner that doesn't have to learn a completely new style of offense, and I feel like that is a very, very big plus for the Auburn team. Also, just purely social media speculation, because that's now the investigative journalism that everybody decides to go with. And so why hop on any other train than that right there? Sebastian Williams-Adams has posted pictures of both Filip Jovic and Cade Magwood with like the broken heart emojis and like sad songs. So maybe that means like, I'm going to miss you as I'm still here next year. I don't know. Just speculation on that side of things. I think Tahad's done the same thing.
I think if you dive deep into it, the broken heart emoji symbolizes two pieces that actually means he is a two-way player, which is him sending a message to other coaches in the portal that he is open and has a broken heart and is looking for a new home because his has been broken and taken from him. And so now he wants to go and play somewhere else where his heart can be filled. And was it a red heart that he posted?
I was going to say, notice it was
okay,
red
okay,
as well.
So
which
that means
red
probably,
usually, according to school, red is usually the math folder, which shows that he can not only score and put points on his points category, but because of the defense that he plays, he also takes points away from other teams.
Yep, he's confirmed. He's going to Stanford. All right, so we'll take a break. We'll come back, and we'll talk more basketball transfer portal. Zoom out from Auburn a little bit, because the names that are out there and the money that's being thrown around is insane. We'll talk about that when we come back, because we're just underway here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader and home of Auburn women's basketball.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
All right, we're back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking more college basketball transfer portal. It opened up yesterday. I haven't seen any major commitments yet, unless I'm just crazy and have not been on that corner of the internet.
No, there's been a couple of them,
but nothing major that I've seen. No big name players yet.
No, right now Texas, Syracuse, and Xavier are the top three. Tennessee went and got Lundblade from Belmont, I believe, one of like the 40% three-point shooters,
that
which
is a sniper, yeah.
a pretty solid one. Devin Royal is crystal balled 100% at UConn. We've talked about Bidunga to Texas Tech, who he was actually removed. His crystal ball was removed from Texas Tech. And so do with that what you will. But we have heard that him, Baidunga, and Shelsted from Oregon are on an official visit to Texas Tech together.
That would be nasty.
That would be...
That's a 7 to 8 million dollar duo.
Yes, very much so. Gavin Doty went to Syracuse with McNamara, which is a pretty solid one. A couple other guys are crystal balled to other places. Mike Nwoko from LSU went to Xavier, but those are relatively the only only big time names. Now we do want to shout out our guy, although he hasn't been our guy for the past couple of years. Trey Donaldson declared for the NBA draft today, which is pretty solid.
Yeah. Hope the best for him.
You do. He's one of those guys that you just feel like, yeah, you tie with Auburn a little bit and you have the memories. He was what Auburn hoped Elliott Cadeau was for Michigan.
God, yeah, you're not kidding.
Based off of, I'm sure the hair plays a factor in that as well, but the style of play, and you saw what Trey was able to do. I think a better three-point shooter than Cadeau was, at least career-wise. But no, wish him all the best and excited to see what he's hopefully able to do at the next level.
I did see where Estrella from Tennessee is taking some big-time visits.
He was a surprise for me that entered.
Yeah.
Tennessee and Alabama both have had a lot of guys that I didn't necessarily expect.
I mean, Estrella was a 10-5 guy off the bench for them. I mean, 10 points, 5 boards a game. I mean,
as
that's
6'11", 250-pound power forward.
He's a solid player, man, and he's linked to some big-time power conference teams. Same way with some of the Alabama kids, too. I mean, Alabama's going to have to completely rebuild their roster, and people are talking about that as like, oh, no, what's happening in Tuscaloosa? Is Nate Oates okay? My thought is, and I haven't talked to anybody in Tuscaloosa in the last day or two, but that's probably by design, would be my guess from Nate Oates. I mean, my guess is, didn't work this year, they're going to clean house, and they're going to just invest a ton of money, and they're going to go buy themselves a new roster next season.
And, yeah, transfer portal now more than ever is a two-way street of, I'm going to enter the portal because I know the conversations that you are having with three other guys at my same position.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, I'll find a new home. I think
you can't fire me because I'm quitting.
That's exactly what it is. But I think Bethea was one of the question marks that Alabama was hoping to keep from Miami, who was expected to have kind of a bigger year. But I think Aiden had a bigger year than I think a lot of people were expecting,
at least
from like the points per game jump. I will say, though, now as Filon has entered the portal, or not the portal, the NBA draft as well.
I wish.
If Alabama is building around Aiden Holloway, which I don't think Nate Oates is 100% doing, I think that would draw concern. That being said, everything that Nate Oates has talked about of being a bigger, more paint presence team and possibly shifting the type of basketball that they play,
or at least
having multiple ways to play. I'll believe it when I see it, but the transfer portal will at least show a design, or at least the mindset of, this is what we could go to if needed.
Right hand salute.
Hello, sir.
Hello, Mr. President. He has texted in to the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067, which you can do as well. And he said, am I seeing this right? Every All-MAC player, first through third team, is in the transfer portal.
I haven't gotten confirmation of that, but I would not doubt that.
I haven't seen that
whatsoever.
Stat. Yeah, he's asking if this is correct. Every All-MAC, okay, the MAC conference, every player that made first, second, and third team in that conference, he says that all of them are in the transfer portal? Oh, talk about a bad sign of where college athletics are, if that's the case, with a mid-major conference where all 15 to 20, depending on if they do like a six-man and if they do a couple extra positions and things like that.
Yeah.
You're talking the best 15 to 20 players from a mid-major conference are all leaving to go somewhere else, preferably to a power conference team.
you look at right now, Akron has four guys in the portal. Ball State has five guys in the portal. Bowling Green has three guys in the portal. Buffalo has four guys. Central Michigan has three guys. Eastern Michigan has three. Kent State has five. Miami of Ohio has three. Northern Illinois has four. Ohio has four. Toledo has five. I mean, it's
golly.
Everybody. We can keep going. UMass has one. Western Michigan has five. I mean, this is the fear of what we have talked a little bit about, and you haven't seen it in football as much, but I think you're going to continue to see it.
Do you have a list of those guys pulled up by chance?
I do.
In the portal?
Not a true list, but I mean, I can scroll and look at the teams.
Okay. I had the conference teams pulled up.
Oh, gotcha.
We can just compare. Anyway, sorry.
But we haven't seen it again in football, at least not to the extreme that I think you could see it in basketball. But unless you're a borderline five-star or a five-star that's going to go compete and possibly be a one-and-done, there's going to be a lot of schools and a lot of teams that say, hey, go play here for a year. Develop. We love this coaching staff. We'll talk to you next year.
Well, how often do you and I see it calling high school athletics where we talk to so many parents now and it's like, hey, our kid went on a visit to, you know, Troy, or they went on a visit to Kent State or whatever the case may be. And it's like, man, that's awesome. That's great. Like, encourage that, because now more than ever, high school kids going to play football, basketball, softball, whatever, at a mid-major for a year or two, develop, get your feet wet, and then move up to the next level. That used to be frowned upon 10 or 15 years ago, but now, for the majority of kids who aren't five-star talent, go develop somewhere. There's nothing wrong with that, in my opinion.
Go play. But, again, that just brings up the fear of what we've talked about, of these bigger schools, once the NCAA splits off, of these bigger schools going and basically funding the smaller schools to go and develop these kids for a year or two until they essentially work their way up from the AA level to the AAA level and then can go play for the University of Alabama after spending a year at UAB or Troy.
The minors. That's all it is in college athletics. So we'll take a break. We'll come back and flip to the diamond and
talk about mid-majors.
Talk Auburn baseball.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins, and we head to the phone line to welcome in our longtime Wednesday 2:30 guest. He is the man who covers Georgia athletics better than anybody. Our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is with us on the phone lines now. Jordan, we missed you last week. We hope you had a fun, enjoyable, relaxing, well-deserved vacation, and we're glad to have you back on the show this week.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on, and yeah, nice chance to catch my breath for a week. Had a good time and gearing up for the end of spring practice, and plenty to talk about with you guys today.
That one was the actual vacation, right? Not the one to Buffalo that was maybe not as enjoyable as this one.
Yeah, you got that right. I had some good wings in Buffalo, and can't really report anything else that went on up there in New York.
Well, there's a ton to get to in the world of Georgia athletics. You mentioned spring practice. Of course, the transfer portal is open right now for college basketball as well. But do want to start on the football side and get kind of caught up on what's been happening with Kirby Smart's squad there in Athens. What can you tell us of what you've heard from Kirby, if you've had a chance to talk with him, what you've seen from the team, if they've given you any access, and just some of the notes that you're hearing and seeing so far from Georgia football spring practice?
Yeah, at this point, Georgia has 10 practices in the books, so just five left to spring practice. They had their first scrimmage this past Saturday, and based on what we heard behind the scenes, what Kirby shared on Tuesday, I think everything went about according to plan. Kirby talked about that Georgia had some explosive plays in that scrimmage, had some penalties he wanted to clean up, but that's nothing out of the ordinary for this time of year. And you know, from some of the folks we talked to who are at the scrimmage, I think one of the big things for Georgia is, you know, they feel really good about the weapons they got around Gunnar Stockton. Elias Williams, the sophomore tight end, had a really good scrimmage, had about a 50-yard touchdown and had some other big plays as well. You had C.J. Wiley, a sophomore receiver who really stepped up, had a good scrimmage there, had some other receivers. Caden Prothrow, who also is a tight end, kind of an offensive weapon. They'll line him up wherever they can get him. Some of the other receivers as well, making good plays in that scrimmage. So, productive spring to this point for Georgia. I think to this point they've done a good job of staying relatively healthy. They've had a few guys dealing with some bumps and bruises, but nothing out of the ordinary. So far, so good. Kirby was asked on Tuesday if the G-Day scrimmage will go on as planned. He always offers the caveat that, hey, if we're having injury issues, you know, we may kind of tweak how we're going to go about the scrimmage on April 18th. But he said everything's good to go, that they are in good shape there, and that they want to finish the second half, really, of spring practice strong and then get things going and put on a show for the fans of G-Day.
And Jordan, you mentioned the transfer portal and just the spring practice and everything. With Georgia not being somebody that loses a whole lot of guys and ultimately doesn't necessarily go after a whole lot of guys, who are some of the big names that Georgia is expecting to hear from, whether that be in spring practice? You feel like Khalil Barnes has led the way with a majority of the notes, the defensive back from Clemson. Anybody else that Georgia fans or Auburn fans need to look out for this Georgia team that may not have been in Athens over the past couple of years?
Yeah, Khalil is a good one to start with, the Clemson transfer, who is actually just down the road at North Oconee High School. He decided to come back home for his final year of eligibility and doing a great job. I think he is very much in the mix to start, probably at the star position, but he's in competition with Rayshon Dinkins and also getting some consideration at the safety spot as well. They are looking to figure out who will be the starting strong safety with K.J. Bolden playing that free safety this year. And, you know, the other transfers, I'd point out two other guys, really three, and got to start since we're talking about, you know, talking with you guys, and Morris Williams going to be playing outside linebacker for Georgia. I don't think that he's going to be starting on this team. Quintavious Johnson did such a good job toward the end of last year, but I think you're going to see a good bit of a Morris as he gets settled in and looks to help with a defense that wants to rush the passer a great deal better than it did last year. Two other guys I'd mention, Isaiah Canyon, who I think will be Georgia's starting X receiver, a big body that they got from Georgia Tech, from Warner Robins High School. And what I think really helps with him coming to Georgia, he's reuniting with two of his high school teammates, Rayshon Dinkins, who I just mentioned, one of the defensive backs, as well as Isaiah Gibson, an outside linebacker. And the transfer that I think on the whole a lot of people sort of overlooked was Dante Dowdell, running back they got from Kentucky. And 6'2", 225, and I keep calling this guy a mercenary. He's been on a different team each of the past 4 years. He was at Kentucky last year. He was at Nebraska. He was at Oregon. But this is a big-bodied back, and he's done a really good job this spring. And I see him, you know, not being a starter, but you'll have Nate Frazier, you'll have Chauncey Billings, and you'll have Dante Dowdell. I think you'll see a good bit of all three of those guys. And Dowdell's shown early on that, hey, he knows what he's signing up for. He was an SEC back last year. I think he's come into Georgia, hit the ground running, and has a chance to play quite a bit this fall.
We got our guy Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 here with us on the phone lines, joining us as he does every single Wednesday at 2:30, and not necessarily a question about spring practice, but more so what's taken place in the summer as SEC Media Days was just released, and Georgia and Kirby Smart going yet again on Tuesday with Alex Golish in Auburn, South Carolina and Shane Beamer, and Vanderbilt with Clark Lee. We're excited to see you there again, hopefully, right, with all the things going on in Tampa this year.
Yeah, fingers crossed that we'll be able to meet up down there. Interested to see what the event looks like, first time in Tampa. And was going to mention, you know, I'm sure that makes things a little bit easier on Alex Golish. He's got some experience in Tampa, but Georgia, if I had to guess, Kirby Smart likes to get in and get out. Yeah. So I would not be surprised if Georgia goes first. We usually get Kirby about 8 a.m. local. Then he goes up, he talks on the big stage, and then he heads out of town as quickly as he can. He's got other things to do, I'm sure.
Well, it'll be a lot of fun, and it'll be here before we know it. And, of course, that is considered the unofficial kickoff and the unofficial start to the college football season. But the official start to the basketball offseason is here with the transfer portal opening yesterday. Georgia will be one of the teams who goes out and tries to replace names and positions that they lost and trying to improve from this year to next year. What can you tell us on the latest transfer portal news for Mike White in Georgia basketball as we're just less than 48 hours into this spring window?
Yeah, Georgia's got to be very busy when it comes to reloading this roster. At this point, Georgia has 8 available scholarships. At this point, they know Smurf Millender is coming back, that Kareem Stagg is coming back, and probably the biggest one yet, Cannon Catchings, announced on Tuesday that he is returning. Still waiting on an answer from Blue Kane. I know Georgia wants him back, but there is intrigue out there, and unclear yet if he's going to go in the portal. And you know, it's sort of still kind of working on that list of who Georgia's going to look at. I would point to RJ Anderson, a guard from Kennesaw State, that I think makes a lot of sense. They've got a big need, especially at center, with Santo Surreal going in the portal, so they've got to figure out who they're going to get at center, and they need a shooting guard along with a few other positions as far as depth is concerned. And got a list over at Dogs 24/7 of some initial names that I'm really paying attention to for Georgia. But I feel like this offseason, you know, kind of said something very similar last year, but this feels like make or break for Mike White when it comes to staying competitive. You know, I think that there was some frustration with how that first round game against St. Louis played out. I mean, Georgia lost by 25 and it wasn't even that close. So Georgia's got some key pieces that they got coming back. They're waiting on an answer from Blue Kane, which I think, you know, hopefully they will get in the next day or so. But they've got some big pieces, some big holes they got to fill in this roster, which makes the next week and change very important for them.
Yeah, with 7 guys entering the portal for Georgia, I mean, was it a huge surprise with those guys? Was it one where it was like, okay, as the season goes on, you feel like that was a growing sensation? Every team has their feelings about particular players. We talked about Filip Jovic and Caden Magwood from the Auburn perspective. Filip was a little bit of a surprise. Caden definitely was not. But your read on the guys who are entering the portal for Georgia and kind of where the feelings were coming down the stretch on that idea?
Yeah, for the most part, I'd say no surprises. I think you had a good feel for a few of the guys, even in the middle of the regular season, that there was a chance they were going to leave. And then, I mean, to just put it bluntly, by the way you watched the St. Louis game, you just kind of had a feeling, you know, you could look at that box score and would not be surprised
yeah.
if some of those guys have gone into the portal. So I do hate it from a fan perspective. I mean, we have fans over on Dogs 24/7 that are frustrated with how the roster flips every single year, but that's not just a Georgia-specific thing. That's just sort of the nature of where college sports is right now, especially college basketball with the roster numbers and how often guys are moving. So I do hate that from that standpoint, especially for fans who want to get to know these guys and follow these guys. But it's just sort of a matter of you know, the way it is right now. And like I said, Mike White and his staff, they got their work cut out for them. But they've got to make some big moves. They got to land some talented guys if they're going to make it 3 straight NCAA tournament appearances in a row.
Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 with us on the phone lines here on ESPN 106.7. Are we to the point with Mike White? I mean, is this portal class make or break? Does he have to restock and reload? Are fans kind of in wait and see? Do they give him a leash? I mean, where are we at with this portal class? And then, of course, that feeding into whatever next season looks like, Jordan.
Yeah, I don't know if I can definitively say make or break, and I might have even described it as such earlier, but I don't know that Mike's going into a hot seat this upcoming season, but I do think it's fair to say that fans have been frustrated. The past 2 seasons ended in very similar situations. Georgia kind of got hot toward the end of the regular season, one and done in the SEC tournament, and then get outclassed, frankly, in the NCAA tournament. So I know that that leaves a bad taste in fans' mouths. But again, them going to the tournament in back-to-back years, that's the first time that has happened in 24 years. I think you do have to be realistic about where the program is, where the program was when Mike White got here. Tom Crean won 6 games in his final season. So Mike deserves a ton of credit for what he's done and what he's built. But, you know, fans always want to see it taken to the next level. And I think he could probably survive this team not making it to the NCAA tournament. But it's one of those situations where you want to keep the ball moving forward, because in an era where, you know, the amount of funding you get, the amount of booster support you have, that dictates a lot of how competitive you can be. So it's always in your best interest to be able to sell your vision and say, look, if we can have these resources, if we can go out and get this caliber of player, we can go out and we can be competitive and we can win our share of games. So I think it's important from that standpoint of you don't want to be in a situation where, you know, you take that step back and all of a sudden you're trying to sell a vision to your boosters who are no longer willing to buy what you're selling.
Sure. And Jordan, while I know you are primarily in the football and basketball space, a lot of our conversations here on the show revolving around what happens at Plainsman Park with Auburn baseball. And so wanted to be able to give you the chance to shout out all of the guys and girls doing their work sitting at Foley Field and covering one of the hottest teams in the country right now, Georgia 22-5, 10-2 in conference play, sitting atop the Southeastern Conference right now, winners in 8 straight, and putting up a score that Kirby Smart in an early 11 a.m. kickoff would be very proud of, a 28-3 win over Presbyterian yesterday.
Yeah, as a Falcons fan, I would have preferred maybe an additional run just to get off of that 28-3 snide. That number just kind of follows you around. But no, Georgia baseball, man, has been on a tear. Last weekend, they swept Mississippi State in Starkville. That was the first time they had done that in 22 years. Got a big home series coming up this weekend with Florida. And, yeah, Georgia right now sitting atop the SEC. I think they've got a game on Texas. And I want to shout out Olivia Sayer, who covers Georgia baseball for us. She does a fantastic job.
Yes, she does.
And she'll be at Foley Field this weekend and covering a team that the bats are really going and hitting well. I know before the Presbyterian game they had 92 home runs this season, and they might have, you know, come close to doubling that with how they played in that game at Presbyterian. But they're playing well. Very interested to see. They've won their first 4 SEC series of the year. Got an opportunity to do it and move it to 5 when the Gators come to town on Friday.
92 home run. I played my fair share of games at Foley Field, and I never made the 4 left turns, but I know the launch pad, and there were a couple slow jogs when we got to play a couple of games there. Jordan, the biggest question and the most important reason we have you on the phone lines this afternoon, your winner in the Masters this weekend.
I'm going with Xander Schauffele. I just kind of have a feeling. Okay. He's been very competitive in the Masters the last few years. You know, I would be remiss not to shout out some of the Georgia golfers, you know, Harris English, Russell Henley, Sepp Straka. I don't know that Bubba's ready to be competitive in it again, but I believe there's 5 Georgia golfers in it. So I think some of those guys will be competitive, but I'm going with Xander. He's been close. He's been competitive in this tournament in the past. And I think he breaks through this year.
Look at that. Put him on the spot, and he still had an answer.
He still had it, man. That's why they pay you the millions of dollars in Athens, Georgia. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 is with us. He does cover Georgia better than anybody else, which is why we have him on our show. And we're so grateful for his time and his information and his friendship each and every week, Wednesdays at 2:30. My friend, plug it all. Tell people where they can find your work and everybody there at Dogs 247.
Well, first, I'm going to get Jacob to negotiate my next contract. I think we're missing a
mine
few
too,
zeros.
Please.
Yeah, we're missing a few zeros, but no, dogs247.com on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at dogs247. And like we said, busy time of year. We got spring practice still going on. We've got Georgia baseball heating up. We got the portal. Pretty much checking my phone every 10 minutes to see what's going on there and providing updates over on the junkyard. And right now, we got a 60% off sale, so if you're a Georgia fan listening to this, be sure and go check it out. And always encourage folks to go check out Auburn Undercover. They usually run similar deals to us. Jason Caldwell, Nathan King, Christian Clemente, they all do a fantastic job, so got to shout them out as well.
Jordan, who won? Was it Soler last night, or was it Ronaldo Lopez? Who won the brawl last night?
Neither one of them was Walt White. I mean, he made a tackle that I think I'd seen before the season. He made a comparison and was talking about, I can't remember what the comparison was, but he brought up special teams in football, and I thought, okay, Walt knows the fan base he's a part of.
That's right.
He's now the manager of. Now he's out here making tackles. I think Kirby Smart's probably showing in film.
That was a form tackle. No risk of targeting right
in
there.
The crowd too. Yeah. He came out of nowhere, and you had to watch the video in detail to see him be the spearhead of that whole thing. But that was incredible last night.
Yeah, I haven't confirmed it, but I think he's out at practice here in Athens teaching them how to tackle. He's working the mats. He's showing them how it's done.
I'm telling you, there's never a dull moment when it comes to anything sports-wise in the state of Georgia. So, Jordan, we appreciate it, man. Again, good to get you back on this week. We'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. You can check him out, Dogs247.com. Him, his entire crew. Again, Olivia Sayer, yeah, she covers Georgia baseball. She does a great job with that as well. And I'm sure she's having a ton of fun covering one of the nation's best baseball teams right now. We'll take a break. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one right after this.
This is Ian Fitzsimmons from ESPN Radio, and you're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7, thanks to Jordan Hill of Dogs247, who... joined us at the buzzer, huh? Joined us right there at the buzzer. We were not expecting him today, but he came in clutch, as he always does. And so when it comes to reliable guests on this show, Jordan is up there at the top. And so appreciate him always again topping on with us, talking all things Georgia athletics. And I'm throwing up the Tyreek Hill, throwing up the peace sign. I'm out. I am hitting the road. I'm heading to... right back to Phoenix City, baby, 2 days in a row. And then you're going to be there tomorrow, so if we just want to buy and rent a house over there.
That's okay.
No, I'm good. Yeah, I didn't feel good when I said it. I'm heading to Phoenix City as soon as we're done here. Auburn High School Baseball, we're opening up area play against the Red Devils in Phoenix City. Three-game set Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So we start tonight, 5 o'clock first pitch, Auburn High in Central Phoenix City. I'll have the radio broadcast for you on 96.3 W. Lee. You can listen in online at 96.3WLEE.com. Or download that Radio Alabama app's got a cool update, very clean, very sleek. So you can check that out. I'm on the air about 4:45, 4:50, give or take. And yeah, first pitch, 5 o'clock, Tigers and Red Devils, back to back nights.
You are staying here though to give the intro.
No, I'm not.
Just because I can't get that.
No. Tell Double D I said hello, though. You're going to talk to Darryl Dappert coming up to start hour number two. And you guys can talk so highly about the NIT while I'm gone.
That, the Pirates, and who knows what to talk about. Paul Skeens did get a win last night, his best outing of the year, but...
the Pirates didn't win today.
They doubled up by, not playing very well in San Diego here this afternoon.
Yeah, so I'm out of here. Christian's got you the rest of the way. Again, tune in with me, 96.3 W Lee, 5 o'clock, Auburn and Central. Stick around. Christian's got you for hour number two.
Is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Not too bad to start hour number two. Haven't done that in quite some time, but this is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two. And man, what an hour number one we had here with you on ESPN 106.7. We started with the college basketball transfer portal. As Caden Magwood enters for the Auburn Tigers, we talked about the shocks and the not too many of them. And Caden is not really one that brings too many open mouths when you bring up the conversation of Caden Magwood entering the transfer portal. We also talked about other big-time names that are in the portal, whether that is linked to Auburn or to not. And Mr. President Eric, we have done a little bit of research, and we have at least confirmed that a very big majority of them, most of the first rounds or the first teams from the MAC are seniors, and so are possibly trying to get more eligibility, but it's not necessarily confirmed. But second and third team, a whole lot have entered. Goes to answer the questions of what the mid-majors are going to look like in the future of college basketball. We also talked with Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7, all things going on in Athens on the football field and the basketball transfer portal as well. Also broke down a little bit of the Braves brawl last night and how we can't necessarily disagree with what Soler did with Ronaldo Lopez and the history that those two have shared. We do have updates on the suspension on that side of things. Here in hour number two, we're talking Auburn baseball. We're breaking down the game against Jacksonville State. Also beginning our preview for Auburn and Kentucky this weekend. But we start our number two with the best way that we know how. We got our guy Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. And I think many consider him to be a Montgomery radio legend. Double D, I know you're happy to talk about the Pirates and what they were able to do this afternoon over in San Diego.
They got pounded, didn't they? This afternoon.
They did. We could talk about Paul Skeens and his finally coming to Major League Baseball this season if we wanted to. Yesterday,
they won five in a row.
They did.
And lost two of three to San Diego, so they just have to bounce back. And right now, though, I'm very happy with what I've had to deal with all these years as being suffering. I am not looking a gift horse in the mouth, so. I'll take it. I'll take that 7-4 or whatever they are.
Hey, as long as you move O'Neill Cruz out of center field, you're in a pretty good spot. And so,
problem is, his bat has been so good. Where
it
you
is.
Put him.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't DH him because you got Azuna, but you can't put him at third. Maybe third is his best because he played shortstop. Came out playing shortstop.
Yeah.
Maybe third with Griffin playing shortstop now, maybe that's the place for him. I don't know.
Yeah, talk about the star-studded talent. What a debut for Connor Griffin. What was it, an RBI double in his first plate appearance for the Pirates?
Yeah, 0-2. They stayed outside. Smart kid, high baseball IQ for 19 years old. Went out and got it. Almost hit it out. So, yeah, I tell you what, I had one of the best sports days in my life on Easter Sunday. First of all, Easter Sunday is a great day to celebrate anyway.
Very much so.
So sports should not be, I feel bad, blasphemous even talking about what a great day it was for sports. But like every team that I pull for, I had, people don't know this, but I really enjoy Premier League soccer. I love soccer. I'm
okay.
A big supporter of Leeds United. They won in the FA Cup. The Pirates won. The Penguins won. Auburn wins. I mean, it was just a really good day Sunday for sports for me, knowing that next weekend will be probably the complete opposite.
Next weekend as in Masters or talking about next weekend?
Just everything every team that I pull for.
Oh, sure, sure. Everything. Yeah. If it worked in favor of one week, it's got the law of averages.
The sports gods will get me and everything, that I next weekend, I'm ready for a rough weekend.
Well, thankfully, no Auburn basketball, I guess thankfully or not so thankfully, but we'll hope the news of Auburn basketball doesn't necessarily hit home and feel like a major loss. But let's dive in to that NIT championship game, Auburn and Tulsa, and Auburn takes down the Golden Hurricane in overtime. Almost did what Auburn has done quite often this season, but they were able to respond thanks to a Kevin Overton 3 in the corner to send this game into overtime. Your overall thoughts before we dive into the Auburn basketball transfer portal?
Well, I think it was very important because I think it sets the tone for how you want to go into the offseason and what kind of taste in your mouth that it leaves. Sure. I mean, if you think about it, it was a microcosm, that game, of kind of what Auburn's season is. You know, you sometimes have looked really, really good, and then they faded in some games and some parts of the season down the stretch. I mean, I think it's very difficult mentally to go into an offseason blowing a 21-point lead in an NIT championship. That's hard. Mm-hmm. That'd been hard to live with for a couple of days. So I was very pleased that they went out on a high note. It's not often that you get to say you won your last basketball game. Trivia, the last time that happened is the COVID year that Auburn self-imposed and beat Mississippi State that last game of the year. It's just a rare thing to win your last game. So I believe that it could be used as a springboard to go into next season, and I think it would have been – and I'll also say this. You know this. When I say this, you're going to nod, because anybody that's been involved in sports, watches sports, coached sports, played sports, broadcast sports, one of the hardest things to do in athletics is to absolutely get your guts ripped out, blow a 21-point lead, and then have to go win a game in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologically, that is hard. And I think what helped Auburn was to get into overtime. They hit a big shot,
yeah,
which kind of propelled them. If Tulsa hits the three to send it into overtime, and you're down three, you know, you're up three after blowing a 21-point lead, that's maybe a little different. But that's hard, man. That is a hard thing to do psychologically, to blow a lead like that and then find the gumption and the dig deep and win a game in overtime like that. So credit to them for doing it.
And even more so in a game that, yes, matters, but with the mentality of it just being that NIT championship, could easily get a team to fall apart. And that's kind of the conversation that's driven the past couple of days on our show, Daryl. And I wanted your thoughts on it, on the fan base question that's gone around Auburn, but a bunch of these college basketball fan bases, of would you rather win the NIT or would you rather get kicked out in the Field of 68 game or the very first round of the NCAA tournament? Where do you stand on that side of things?
Wow. I would say that I'd rather make the NCAA tournament, not get beat in the play-in game. I'd probably rather win the NIT than to get knocked out in that play-in game. But I think getting into that first weekend of the NCAA tournament, even if you go one and done,
sure,
I probably would rather that. I have come around a little bit on the whole take of whether or not Auburn should have accepted the bid, because I was one that didn't think they should.
As were we.
I think it turned out to be the right move. They played five games. Stephen Pearl got to coach more basketball. He got to see lineups. He got to see rotation. So it ended up. But, you know, I will say this. The fact that other fan bases have weighed in on this, who cares? If you're an Auburn fan, and I know it's difficult, one of the things that going forward, going into the next athletic calendar, is there's always going to be hypocrisy in sports. Don't worry about what other fan bases say about the NIT. You know, you're the 69th best team in the country. When people say stuff like that, they're verbally expressing fear, and to say that. So don't, if you're an Auburn fan, don't concern yourself what other fan bases say. They have enough of their own problems that they have to deal with, that they could, you know, people could consider them a laughing stock in other areas. And so, you know, if you want to mock people for winning the NIT, it's better than losing in the first round of Norfolk State.
We got our guy Daryl Dapridge of Locked On Auburn and the Barn here with us to start hour number two here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. And sticking with Auburn basketball, you've now had a couple of names enter the transfer portal. One is a little bit more of a surprise than the other, but you've also had a big-time returnee in Kevin Overton. Your thoughts on what Stephen Pearl is trying to do and those two guys in Caden Magwood and Filip Jovic that have decided to, at worst, test the waters of the transfer portal in college basketball?
The Magwood one is the least surprising thing ever.
Yes.
I mean, you know, the kid sat on the bench for half the season. He got used in the NIT tournament, got utilized in the NIT tournament. So it doesn't surprise me at all. Jovic does a little bit. But, again, people need to remember that there's a value assigned to to players in this transfer portal that agents attribute to people. And just because you're in the portal, you may think you're worth, let's just say, $2 million. You stay in the portal. There's over 3,000 student athletes in the portal right now. You stay in the portal for 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Other schools don't think you're worth $2 million. Who knows? The problem is it's budgetary like anything else. Mm-hmm. So if Auburn has a budget of, let's say, we've heard anywhere between 12 and 14 million, you can't spend $2 million on a guy that you don't even know is going to be your starter at the four.
Yeah.
You don't know that. He hasn't, he's not a known commodity. Yes, he played hard. Yes, he came on late. Yes, he started. But let's be honest, he started because Murphy sat. Murphy quit. So I don't, you know, you're better off suited getting that, using that money on somebody you've seen start at another Power Four or a mid-major than the unknown commodity. And Kentucky, Arkansas, teams with $30 million rosters, they can afford the luxury of getting a guy for $2 million that's going to come off the bench. Auburn can't.
That being said, what Auburn has been able to bring back is Kevin Overton, who you feel like at the bare minimum brings a whole lot of comfort, not only to this Auburn offense, to the three-point shooting, but to Stephen Pearl as well. Your thoughts on KO returning, the first time that he will be staying at a program for his second year throughout his college career. What does that mean for Auburn in 2026?
I think he was the most important player that you had to retain. I really do. I think when you look at that roster and you look at the guys that would potentially could come back, I think Kevin Overton was priority number one. And I think it was because the way he played, when he played well and he got 20 points, Auburn seemed to win basketball games.
Sure.
And he was that guy that was kind of a leader. He's very intense. He always played hard. He's your best, one of your best on-ball defenders. Very good rebounder for the guard position. I think he was crucial and key to bring back for this year. You built your team around guys like Kevin Overton. And so that was a most important, you know, retainment that you could have. And I also think probably one of the least surprising. I really felt like he was the most important, and he also checked the box of being the one that was most certain to come back. And so it's very good for Auburn that he came back.
Daryl, do you have another priority for Auburn basketball and who they need to bring back, or any names or positions that you fully expect Auburn to attack very hard in the transfer portal over these next couple of weeks?
Well, it all depends on if Freeman and Tahan come back. I think in Sway, I mean, you've got three left that you're going to, you know, and again, I think Tahan is somebody that you've obviously penciled in as a starter. He looked different down the stretch.
Mm-hmm.
He may be freed up more offensively without the offense going through Keyshawn Hall if it goes through him. Maybe you go out and get a point guard, a true point guard, and move Tahad to the two where he can be freed up to do more things freedom-wise offensively, more spaces, more coming off screens to shoot threes, that kind of thing. So I think he probably becomes priority number two, and then I would go to Freeman. I think Freeman is a freak. I think his ceiling is incredible. I think at times this year he did a really good job in willing Auburn to win some games. I think he can score double digits for you. He's a very athletic rebounder, shot blocker, that kind of thing. So I think Freeman becomes, after Tahad, your next priority to try to wrap up. I love Sway. I do. I just wonder where he fits in. And he's another example of a guy. Does Auburn see him as their starting four? I know he started some this year at the four when Keyshawn Hall played three. I'm high on him. Is Auburn that high on him
mm-hmm.
where they think, okay, he's our starter next year? And if he is, then you do have to pay, and you got a pony and ante up to keep him.
It's a good conversation. Jacob and I have talked a lot about Elijah Freeman and compared him to the Jalen Williams, not necessarily the style of play, but just when you realize how good you are. And when Elijah Freeman realizes that he is the most athletic player on the court just about at all times and has the freedom to go create for himself or do what he did in the NIT and throughout the SEC of, man, go and gobble up rebounds. Had 14 of them in the NIT championship game. When he has the freedom, if he comes back to Auburn, going to be a very, very big piece. We got Daryl Dapperich here of Locked On Auburn and the Barn with us on the phone lines. And before we let you go, maybe not necessarily a topic that we have overly enjoyed the thought of today. Haven't been able to break it down. We'll do so here in just a little bit. But your thoughts on Auburn baseball. They fall to Jacksonville State last night. Not sure if fall is the right word. They get run ruled by the Gamecocks, and a team in Jacksonville State who we've talked a whole lot about, the in-state opponents, that being their biggest game, them wanting to make a statement. But across college baseball, a lot of people talked about how this wasn't necessarily an upset based off the way that Jacksonville State plays baseball. They did it again inside Plainsman Park last night. Your thoughts from what you've seen in this contest last night, but also the really big series win over Arkansas over the past weekend?
This team's starting to become a little inconsistent. I mean, I get it that Jacksonville State is a good baseball team. I get it that these midweek games are so unpredictable, and they're the World Series for the team that comes in that's not the Power Four. That being said, Auburn found a way to smoke Georgia Tech earlier in the year, in midweek, and now they've lost games to Cincinnati, Jacksonville State, and Georgia Tech. And I think the biggest concern to me is none of them have been close. So am I in that panic mode that other people are, where you know, talk me off the ledge? No, but I still don't think a program that's ranked in the top 15 should be getting hammered by teams like Jacksonville State and Cincinnati. So there's a little bit of a concern there for me, and I think that especially coming off that big, could have swept that Arkansas series, probably should have swept the Arkansas series. The pitching is starting to get racked a little bit. That's concerning. Obviously, you couldn't throw Alvarez last night because he threw Thursday night, right, against Arkansas. But I don't know. I think that I would expect a little bit more. And, you know, to me, Auburn's got to win this series against Kentucky this weekend. I think it's paramount, because I think they're floundering a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree with that statement. We've talked a little bit about that as well. Of everything is usually you take two at home, you find a way to take a game on the road, but this one feels mandatory for the Auburn Tigers this weekend. Get two, and if you have the opportunity to sweep, you have to do what great teams do, and that is get that sweep. Final question before we let you get out of here, Daryl. On Auburn spring practice, I'm sure that you have seen the videos going around of Cam talking about being tired of supporting a product that has not won, and talking about, man, you got to get that into the mind of the players, but more than that, into their parents' minds. Your thoughts on the comments from Cam, and do you agree with it? Do you feel like he speaks for a majority of the fan base? And then how cool do you think it is that Golish is continuing to do what the fan base considers to be the very easy thing in gaining popularity by not only asking, but demanding former Auburn players to come back, be a part of practice, be on the field, and just be a part of this Auburn football program again?
I don't have any problem at all with what Cam Newton said, as long as he's backing it up with his checkbook.
Sure.
If he's donating to Auburn and he's giving money to Auburn and he's helping fund NIL, yes. It would be one of those situations where you get tired of supporting a product that's just not getting it done on the field. And I think he also is probably a little bit tired of the way some of these teams carried themselves the last couple years. And, you know, was it more about chasing a bag than being a part? We've talked about this 1,000 times. I think Cam Newton and some of these other Taquio Spikes, Bo Jackson, some of these players, see how soft Auburn became as a program the last couple years. So that's more importantly, you address that. Again, the Drinkwitz standing on the brick wall and doing what he did, and Kirby Smart and the Missouri players at the coin toss.
Yeah.
Pavia slant, picking up somebody and, you know, body slamming them on the sidelines and there being no, that needs to stop. That's more than anything else. The message is, I think they're tired of letting people come in, mock you, run over you, and being a laughing stock. That's not Auburn. That's not Auburn. You need to play Auburn and realize that when you've left Jordan Hare, you know, we were in a war, we were in a battle. I think that's definitely going to change. I think you're going to see a completely different mindset in culture with what Auburn's going to run out on the field this year when it comes to toughness, intensity, attention to detail, sticking up for your teammates, that kind of stuff. And I just think it's going to be eye-opening. Eye-opening for some opposing coaches that think they can come in and run all over them, and eye-opening for some of the fans that are going to be sitting in the seats.
Well said, my friend. Daryl Daprich, host of part of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. Tell everybody what you got going on. No more basketball in-game coverage, but a whole lot of postseason conversations and a whole lot of transfer portal conversations. I know spring ball taking up a lot of priority as well. Tell everybody where they need to go to keep up with you and your work.
Yes, we got a lot going on. Wednesdays and Fridays, I'm on Locked On Auburn with Zach Blackerby, wherever you get your podcast, YouTube. Sunday is at 8. I'm on the Barncast Live with Kyle Rush and Zach. Same thing. But then we'll be doing some stuff from A-Day. We may be going live from A-Day. We may be doing a pregame show from A-Day, just a kind of a little live 5-10-minute hit, that kind of thing. Then we'll go live after A-Day like we normally do during the football game.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not live. We do a show, a postgame show. And then I'm going to be doing some baseball here and there with Lindsey Crosby and Zach, covering a couple games and some big games. And then if anything happens in the transfer portal, either basketball or, you know, we'll if something happens from that, or Auburn signs somebody from a recruiting standpoint for football, we may do a reaction show right away and post that as well.
Awesome. Well, Daryl, we appreciate your time and, as always, your friendship as well. We look forward to being able to talk to you again this time next week.
All right, brother. Have a good week.
You as well. Daryl Daprich of Locked On Auburn and The Barn. Man, does a fantastic job covering all three of the major sports for Auburn. You feel like anytime there's news, he's one of the guys that you can go to get everything and more. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk a little baseball before we flip to the Auburn baseball game last night. Any concerns? Anything positive to look out from that? The phone lines will be open the rest of the show as well. We'll take a break and come back right after this here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
This is Coach Stephen Pearl, and you're on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
Back here on ESPN 106.7, a reminder, Jacob Goins out on the road. We saw the station vehicle pull out of here not too long ago. Auburn taking on Central on the baseball diamond this time here coming up in just a little bit, about an hour and a half or so. Jacob will go on air right around 3:45 or 4:45, 4:50, I guess I should say. With Auburn and Central Phoenix City start of area play in 7A, but it was the Auburn High softball Tigers that he got to call last night, taking down Central for the first time in, I believe, 16 attempts. And so a major apology to our good buddy Jack Hudden, who we've been hearing from, said that he's partially tuned in this afternoon out of town, not able to call the game. But his biggest nightmare came true of not being able to be on that side of things. But Auburn gets the win over Central on the softball diamond, looking to see if they can do so tonight on the baseball diamond, the first of three. And rather than it being a away game and then the doubleheader, you have a three-game set that a lot of the 7A teams have started to do. And so Auburn at Central tonight and then back home at SEMO Field for Thursday and Friday first pitch on there, all at 5 o'clock. And so excited to hear the news on that side of things, but did want to dive into a little Braves conversation here before the music kicks us out. I guess it's more of a update on what is happening between the Braves and the Angels. Braves are up 1-0 right now in the afternoon game for the West Coast, a Ozzie Albies sacrifice fly. But an update from a whole lot of the MLB national reporters of Jorge Soler as well as Ronaldo Lopez have both been suspended 7 games based off of the brawl that happened last night. Both are appealing. Not sure why you appeal. We did not fight, sir. We were trying to hug it out and let everybody know that we were going to be okay. And there's a possibility that Ronaldo Lopez is going to get more than 7 games because of the punch with the baseball thrown in his hand. And so more updates on that as we go. But we flip over to Auburn baseball coming up next here on ESPN 106.7.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. I'm Christian Griffin here with you in the ESPN 106.7 studio. No Jacob Goins here with us for the final hour out on the road heading to Central Phoenix City, but a conversation that how conveniently he just got to miss out on here this afternoon. Really, really unfortunate on that side of things. Tripp was actually talking to me during the break and said that if Jacob were to be here, he was going to offer him some Masters merch when Tripp went down there. But instead, I get to now double up my gear. And so I really appreciate everything that you have for us here this afternoon. I know your mindset is where it needs to be, and you're just paying it forward for all of the Masters gear, right?
Absolutely.
Well, we do want to dive into a little bit of an Auburn baseball conversation, whether it's for good or for bad. And if you have thoughts on this, the game from last night, the series upcoming, feel free to chime in. 334-321-1390 is the phone line number. The text box, well, I guess I should say the text box is open, but I will not see it, unfortunately. But feel free if you want to ask Mr. Goins a question. You can send it in the text box, as he's only, you know, 30 minutes away from us, and he can text over the question if need be. But if you want to dive into the conversation of Auburn baseball, 334-321-1390. As Auburn fell to Jacksonville State at home inside Plainsman Park, 15-4 last night in only 8 innings. You did not play 9, and the only 4 runs that you put up were in the home half of the 6th inning. And it started early and often for Jacksonville State, who we dove into a little bit of a team breakdown yesterday, but not as specifically as we probably should have. Our scouting report was that the team was in the top 30 in the RPI. It's a team that loved to manufacture runs, and my goodness, diving into that game and looking a little bit more at some of these Gamecock statistics, they lead the country in sacrifice bunts, sacrifice flies, and stolen bases. That is the game plan for this Jacksonville State team. That's how they win games, and that's how they manufacture runs, and how they have one of the biggest offensive productions every single time they take the field. And Auburn did not seem ready for it. If you didn't watch the game, based off of what I just said, you should know the strategy of this team coming into Plainsman Park. And my goodness, they didn't change the way that they played. Sacrifice, or I guess not even a sacrifice, a bunt for a hit to lead off the game turned into a throwing error from Chatterton, runner on second base. Sacrifice bunt, runner on third. Sorry. Sacrifice bunt that turned into a hit because it was placed beautifully, runners on first and third. Three-hole hitter comes up. Swinging for power, right? Nope. Sacrifice bunt, lays one down. Run scores, runner on second, one out. Okay, we've done that a couple of times. Then a groove fastball, middle. 5 pitches into the game, it's 3-0 Jacksonville State. It felt as if the Auburn team didn't know the overall game plan of this Jacksonville State team, and obviously easier said than done, but a team that has mastered the small ball and the parts of baseball that you don't hear a lot about at the major league level. You don't hear a lot about it at the high college level as well, and a lot of that is because of the pitching on the mounds. And I know this was the midweek for Auburn, and Jacksonville State threw a bunch of arms as well, but even going away from the Auburn baseball perspective of just being a baseball fan, as unfortunate as it was, the brand of baseball that Jacksonville State was awesome to watch. They moved to 28-6 in the season. They're 12-0 in conference play, and they have played that way of baseball, that brand of baseball, for as long as their new coach has been there after spending a long time at Missouri. But it's so satisfying to watch. We talk all about it at our high school level at the Lee Scott Sports Network, and as well as Jacob on the Auburn High Sports Network, even on the softball side of things, which Auburn defeated Central playing small ball last night. But the brand of baseball that is often forgot about but is so satisfying to watch. The selfless at-bats, the get guys on, get guys over, get guys in, forcing a defense to make a play. And you saw on the first three batters of the contest, Jacksonville State's ability to take selfless, not selfish, selfless at-bats and bring runners on base, bring runners over, and ultimately get guys in. And then you saw the power when it needed to happen. And Jacksonville State jumped on Auburn really, really early in that contest. It was 5-0 really before Auburn could even blink. Three runs in the first, two in the third for the Gamecocks. And the home half of the third inning has been, not has been, but using this as an example, this third inning for Auburn is something that brings up a lot of frustration and is something that brings a little bit of concerns. Oh no, what's the news?
Soler hit a home run.
No, he didn't. Oh no.
402, no doubter to left.
Oh, Jorge Soler. Which, funny enough, we talked about Jorge Soler being suspended with Ronaldo Lopez, but I don't think it was because the decision didn't start before game time, so he was able to continue to play and was the designated hitter. Yeah, that really, really hurts. Braves are up 2-1, but Jorge Soler, I guess a good send-off trip for your week-long vacation. That's, oh man, that's a bit painful. And now the Angels have them loaded in the home half of the second inning. Man, you were talking about having the take his over on hit by pitches, but not necessarily home runs.
I did not think that he was going to play today. I saw it. I was like, oh, that's funny. Maybe Grant Holmes will get some revenge, or maybe they're too worried that there's going to be a warning. And just I checked my phone. It's, oh, someone hit a home run. Oh,
yeah.
Him.
Man. So the Braves legend has quickly quickly become a rival for the Braves, from last night's home run, last night's brawl in Anaheim, and then a home run today. And so we'll keep you updated on that side of things. But Auburn baseball in the home half of the third inning. You have the first two runners reach. You then had Chase Frelick ground out to third, which could have been a double play. The first baseman thought that he caught it, and so immediately kind of just ran back to first, but the field umpire gave the safe signal saying the ball hit the ground, which Jacksonville State didn't have any more reviews at the time, but you went back and saw the replay. It clearly did hit the ground, and so worked as a fielder's choice. You got runners on second and third with only one out. And then there were two strikeouts at the plate for Auburn, with runners on second and third, down 5-0. And correct me if I'm wrong, was it six pitches between Rembert and Bub Terrell? And the at-bats just didn't feel competitive. And that's what brings up the level of concern that we have talked a little bit about, and Daryl Daprich just did as well, about the very streaky Auburn lineup. We've talked a lot about it, and the pitching staff, I'll take the runs given up with a grain of salt, just based off of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys that threw for the Auburn Tigers. You feel like that's one of those midweeks, and Jacksonville State threw their five guys, and I know it was Garrity that got his first career start and went two innings and struck out every single batter that he faced. But the streakiness, and what we have talked a whole lot about on our show, myself and Jacob, of going to the plates without having a mindset, without having an approach. And that's something that starts in the dugouts. It works its way to when you're in the hole. It works your way to when you're on deck. That's when you're timing everything up. It's when you're timing up the pitcher. And when you're walking up to the plate to have a mindset of doing a job. And it's obviously easier said than done, of hitting a 93-mile-an-hour fastball, hitting an 88-mile-an-hour cutter, and a 75-mile-an-hour breaking ball or changeup, or whatever the case may be, of the guy's arsenal on the mound. But the ability to at least scratch one across in the home half of the third, when you had two on in scoring position with one out, Jacksonville State's up 5-0. You're obviously not playing with the infield in. A ground ball to first, a ground ball up the middle, or anything elevated that you can hit into the outfield brings home a run, and that at least cuts into a little bit of the momentum for Jacksonville State. Instead, back-to-back strikeouts on relatively uncompetitive pitches, uncompetitive swings, Jacksonville State then throws up a zero in the home half of the third. They then respond with two of their own in the top half of the fifth, three of their own in the top half of the sixth inning. Auburn scores four in the home half of the sixth, but then Jacksonville State responds with three in the seventh, two in the eighth to ultimately run rule the Auburn Tigers 15-4. And that is a big time boost in the RPI for Jacksonville State. Auburn, see what they look like now in the RPI. They were fifth going into this game. Auburn stayed fifth. And where did Jacksonville State may not have been completely updated. I don't think it has because the records haven't moved. They're still 28th in the RPI. But again, this team is going to make a whole lot of noise in the postseason, I would imagine, is Jacksonville State, just based off of the mid-major style of baseball that they play that's really, really fun to watch. And Auburn... streaky is, you feel, again, the way that you would want to describe this game, but the offense doing things that have been a concern as of late is a little bit scary to me. Not even diving into the season as a whole of this Auburn team is ultimate panic mode. We're throwing in the towel, hitting the panic button, whatever the case may be. And again, if you have thoughts on this, the phone lines are open at 334-321-1390. Are you in panic mode? Are you taking this game with a grain of salt? Or are you a little bit where myself, where Jacob, and where Tripp are in this conversation of... not a panic button, but something that needs to change. And when you see the same results happening over and over, and not only in midweeks, but in SEC weekends as well, drawing a little bit of concern. And that is where we are at right now, just with the uncompetitive at-bats at the plate. Auburn struck out 14 times last night. 14 of the 24 outs, because again, you didn't play nine, you played eight inside Plainsman Park. 14 of the 24 outs were recorded via the K. A lot of those were with guys on base, with runners in scoring position. And again, that third inning, the frustrations of just the lack of mindset, pre-pitch planning, and just the lack of desire to execute, I feel like, with selfless at-bats. It's something that stacks up. And again, not saying that if the third inning goes the way of Auburn's favor and they scratch one across, they're going to ultimately win a game. But Jacob talked a whole lot about it yesterday of, we don't really care what the pitching staff does. We ultimately do in the grand scheme of things. But in a game like this, I think you're paying much more attention to what the offense looks like. You're paying much more attention to see if you can get back to the mindset of passing the baton, doing what you were able to do early on in the year in a game that Jacksonville State did not throw their top arms, because they talked all about it and talked with the head coach for Jacksonville State pregame and I believe during the game of what that looked like a couple of weeks ago in Tuscaloosa, where Jacksonville State did everything they could to try and win that contest, and it ultimately kind of screwed over their upcoming series. And so they did not do that against Auburn, but still their offense showed up and made it to where it was more than enough to get the job done. They played their brand of baseball, and they ultimately get the run rule victory over the Auburn Tigers. Phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Throwing you hot on the air. Who am I speaking with here on this Wednesday afternoon?
This is Janine.
Hey, Janine, how are you doing on this afternoon?
I'm doing fine. I just wanted you guys to also talk about the fact we made four errors last
night. Sure, very much so.
That didn't help things either. So they're being extremely inconsistent, and this really surprises me off of this team.
Yeah, and it's with guys defensively that have not really had those types of struggles. And it just felt like Jacksonville State came in a little bit more prepared. Auburn made some mistakes, again, at the plate, on the mound, and in the field that ultimately put those guys in a bad spot. And when you give a good offense four or five outs in an inning, they're going to make you pay more times than not.
Well, and I personally think they underestimated them.
Very much so.
They should not have done that.
No, well,
I mean, it was very clear that these guys knew exactly what they were doing, and you know, I frankly was very surprised that we were, it appeared to me, as unprepared for them as we were.
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I mean, you get to the point of the one of the most difficult things to do in baseball or just sports in general is to throw a team off of their game plan, but it's what you have to do against really good teams, and you do it against mid-majors who feel like they have their main strategy, their main way of playing the game. And Auburn knew that going in, but the first inning was a perfect telltale sign of Auburn didn't seem ready to field the three sacrifice bunts that it had in the inning.
Exactly. And that was had to be on the scouting report.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
So, anyway, I like listening to you guys.
Well, we appreciate that. War Eagle, I appreciate you for calling in and being a part of the show and being a fan of Auburn baseball. And, again, I don't think that any of us are at the point of concern for Auburn baseball with the overall season as a whole. But in a game in a midweek like this where you are not playing some low-quality opponent, you're playing a very, very high-quality opponent that is going to be playing baseball in the postseason. It feels like Auburn needed to be ready for the contest, and again, another in-state opponent that Auburn just was not completely ready for. They fall to Jacksonville State 15-4 in 8 innings in Plainsman Park. Auburn will have a chance to bounce back and hopefully forget about the midweek if they can take the series or take the sweep over the Kentucky Wildcats coming up. The second, third, and fourth game of a 5-game home stretch for the Auburn Tigers. We'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up the Wednesday edition of On the Line right after this.
This is Amber from Amber and Ian. You're listening to On the Line with Jacob Goins on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate Janine for calling in and giving her thoughts on Auburn baseball. Again, very valid points on the Auburn fielding mistakes and the four errors that stacked up for Auburn. And again, we've talked all about it, especially at the high school level. If you give a team 4 to 5 outs in an inning, they're going to make you pay every single time. And most of the time last night, Jacksonville State didn't need 4 outs to show how good their offense was. They came in with the game plan and ultimately picked up a very big win that will help them in the RPI a whole lot. We also made the joke after getting done with Daryl about the phone lines as well as the text box and how, although Jacob is not here, that the text box, I guess, is always open and still technically is. I can't promise that Mr. Goins will look at it, but not between the hours of 2 and 4. But we did get a text saying Will and John, first time listeners. And so shout out to Will and John, wherever home is for those two gentlemen, and texting in to the Goins text box and for him to send that over to us. And so really cool on that side of things. Again, we appreciate the growth, man, that this show has had over the past couple of years. Jacob does a phenomenal job. Even when it was Uncle T-Bone, myself joining part-time, and then when I was able to come on full-time, I mean, the growth that we have seen with this show, the listenership, the interactions that we have, we would not trade that for the world. And so we greatly appreciate everybody for listening every day, even if it's just for here and then, or if you prioritize 2 to 4 here on ESPN 106.7. We are very grateful that you are a part of our program. And while we do have a moment to close everything out, did want to give a couple of quick high school updates before I ask Tripp the most important question of the afternoon. Auburn High softball again defeated Glenwood on Monday 6-0. They then defeated Central at Central for the first time since 2021. Not even the first win at Central, the first win over Central since 2021. It just happened to be at the home of the Red Devils. Lost 16 straight, but picked up a road win take not the series against softball, only playing a 2-game series. And so the rematch back here at Auburn High School here this afternoon. But Jacob on the air for Auburn High School baseball as area play begins tonight in Phoenix City. The Auburn Tigers 18-10 overall. They have won 5 of their last 6 and 8 of their last 10. And so the Auburn Tigers playing really good baseball right now as the weather continues to heat up, and a perfect time for area play to get started. For Lee Scott Academy, 16-7 on the season, 3-0 in area play, sweeping Beulah last weekend. We begin a 3-game set with Glenwood tomorrow in Phoenix City. It will be myself and Caleb Robertson joining us from the campus of Glenwood School for Game 1. Games 2 and 3 back at John Meals Field coming up in just a couple of days. But Tripp, before we get out of here, your thoughts, your prediction, because you can't say it after the round's already started. Who takes home the green jacket?
Oh, I think it's going to be a great year. Looks like great weather in Augusta. I'm really excited for that. You know, and it's a little stat I saw earlier. The last person to win the Masters with a, like, under less than 10, so, like, under 9, under whatever, was Sergio Garcia. I think this year, you know, it's hard to say no to Scottie Scheffler, but I'm going to make a hot take. I don't think an American wins it this year. I could see, I'm going to go Ludvig Åberg.
Okay, well, music kicking us out of here. Cameron Young wins my Masters, and we'll say that Jacob takes Scottie Scheffler. But we're back to talk about that, the transfer portal, and a whole lot more. For Jacob Goins, I'm